Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, and with me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And you may recognize our next person. He was on our show a few weeks back when we talked about the team tournaments up in Las Vegas, and he now joins us as our new co-host. Please welcome Robert to the show.
Lewa.
Robert, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you as a 40K player, factions you play, all that sort of fun stuff.
Well, as you might imagine by Lewa, I play orcs, but I've only been playing Warhammer for about 3 years since the 8th edition Necron release. And yeah, after getting beaten by a Smite Club team member in less than 15 minutes by Blood Angel Smash Captain, yeah, competitive bug kind of took a bite and hasn't let go yet. But no, otherwise, I'm a pretty general hobbyist when it comes to 40K. I have Necrons, Orcs, Custodes.
So you must be excited for the new release in December.
Yes, I'm excited to continue cleaning things in a very sturdy manner.
It's going to be a tough call, because right now you're kind of switched back over to Orcs, so are you going to switch back to Custodes or stay with Orcs? What's the game plan?
I am probably going to stay with Orcs unless the internet rumors are true that Speedwa is going to get nerfed into the ground, but we'll see what happens there. Otherwise, I'm going to continue throwing planes at people and going deal with it.
Yeah, I hate to say, I think that's a lot of wish listing at this point. So there is rumors of a update coming. I guess it would be a chapter approved. I think it's what the Minotaurum update with it. And of course, you know, with the printing schedule not quite right around the corner, so I believe it missed the all the heck that the flyers are causing at this point, but it does address a lot of the ad bank stuff as well as some of the Drakari stuff. So we'll see what happens when that finally hits the presses and comes out to the general public. But right now there's just a lot of rumors and talk, and to find out what's going on from there.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to rumors, there is also supposedly a silhouette floating around of a new model that appears to be the new Darkstrider for Tau, who are supposed to be getting a new codex in early January. I guess, did they say actually January? Did they say early 2022? Can't remember.
I thought so too.
Early 2022 would probably refer to January or February. So regardless, unless Tau players get their book right before LVO, I think Tau is going to be stuck in the same place that they are right now.
All right.
Which is in the bottom of the barrel next door.
I am curious to see what they do with them, just from a design standpoint. So be curious to see what they do. But yeah, Darkstrider looks pretty impressive there. And I'll be curious to see if they also bring Darkstrider back into Kill Team, but maybe not. Who knows? We kind of need to add a couple of the characters in the Kill Team for fun.
Yeah,
but those are the big news from the hobby front of things. Moving forward, though, we had a busy tournament weekend, both here locally as well as around the world. Over 10 GT events to talk about. We're going to pare it down a little bit, kind of cover the highlights, ones we thought they were a little more significant than others. So, Ray, where do you want to start first?
How's about the Coventry GT? That's the
yes, merry old England. And I actually saw some pictures of this online of this event. I have to say, I was pretty impressed. It looked like a lot of neat art, well-painted armies, great mats, good terrain. All looked really nice. So
yeah,
that's our top
well
five.
Well over 100 players. Top five.
That's huge for over there.
Oh, yeah. In fifth place, Daniel Whitaker playing Eldari. Fourth, Rudd Steenbachers playing Drakari. Third, Adam Lane playing Skitari. Second, Malik Amon Rubio playing Cult Mechanicus. And in first, Manny Chima playing Orcs.
There we go. And I see Manny moving up, of course, moving into picking Orcs. So he's got to give him a little credit there. People kind of make fun of him for kind of be the ultimate in chasing the meta. But there's zero hobby lag with this guy. He puts out an army, and he's also figured it out from day one. It's just amazing that he's able to do that on a regular basis. So Good to see him. We'll talk about him when we get to the ITC Top 10. Where do we want to go next?
How's about the YHP Fall Brawl?
YHP Fall Brawl. So lovely Fredericksburg, Virginia. What's our top five look like there?
In fifth place, TJ Lanigan playing Chaos. Fourth, John Damaris playing Dark Angels. Third, Stephen Henry playing Adeptus Custodes. Second, Austin Wingfield playing Necrons. And in first, Anthony Vanilla playing Drakari.
So good that we've talked about Anthony all year. Nice to see him get another win. John Damaris, wow, I haven't heard that name in a long time. You may, why does that sound familiar? He used to be Nick Nottavati's co-host on Art of War when they were the podcast on the Frontline Network. So nice of him to pop up there. Also have to give a hat off to TJ Lanigan, despite the significant penalties for his misconduct early in the year. He's still out there. He's still playing. So keep him busy. Some of the notables from this event who were unable to make it to the top five. You got Stephen Four, otherwise known as Juice, and coming in 10th place. Ken Knox in 14th. Monte Caesar in 15th. Monte's playing Harlequins. I'm going to have to take a look at that list in my spare time. And I knew I had somebody else I wanted to talk about, but I can't remember who that is. So whoever you are, sorry about that. All right, where are we going to next?
How's about the Mid-Missouri Maelstrom?
Ah, keep it in the Midwest. Ashland, Missouri. Ray, what's your top five look like there?
All right. In fifth place, Taylor Barger playing Slaanesh Demons. Fourth, Ryan Olson playing Iron Hands. Third, Jeffrey Husser playing Death Watch. And second, Dan Sammons playing Colt Mechanicus. And in first, John Indelicate playing Drakari.
Nice.
I guess his last name leads on to how he played. Not very delicately.
I'm sure he's heard several of those jokes having to grow up with that name. I feel bad for him. All right. But what is he playing, by the way? Drakari. Okay.
Yes, I just said that.
Yeah, not exactly. Well, it is a delicate army in terms of the models. All those little fiddly bits just break off left and right.
Yeah, but the amount of punch it has is not so delicate.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, Mr. Wounds on two poison missiles.
Right, what's our next event?
Maybe we'd discuss the No Retreat Legends.
Absolutely. So not necessarily a GT event, but still something, some significant players. Also, it's a pretty significant event. Whenever Winters kind of throws one of these events, they are definitely a pageantry of hobby to look at. And saw an interesting picture of the winner holding a very large check, which just made me think, uh-oh, what is this all about? So what did you guys see about this event?
Sadly, I didn't get to see a lot of it because I was... Finish. Go ahead, Ray. Sorry.
We'll finish.
I had my nose deep in painting orcs the entire week, so I didn't get to see a lot of this.
Ray, what did you see?
I mostly just caught kind of little bits here and there. Most of it happened during the weekend and was a little bit busy with the next thing we're going to talk about. But every once in a while, I'd catch little bits here and there because I follow Chapter Master Valorak on YouTube.
Yeah, for me, the biggest one is I've always been a fan of Lawrence Baker, who's another Drukhari player from another old school player. And it's funny, last time I actually ran into him at LVO, I think it was two LVOs? It was 7th edition, I remember. And there were like five of us who were vying for the top spot in Best in Faction. We all basically had the same list. It was really funny. And Lawrence came out of nowhere and finished 9th. He just missed the top 8 with Drukhari, which back then, it's hard to imagine the time like now, but back then, Drukhari weren't quite that powerful. They were definitely a fringe army at the time. So it's quite the accomplishment. That was the old, Reaver jet bikes can you ram into your list? Then ally in some craft worlds with the old webway portal. So that was fun.
Yeah, I guess the one person that I kind of follow in the roster there. With his only win using Dark Angels is the Glacial Geek Phil. He wooed really hard in that win, but otherwise he didn't do too well.
Yeah, it's one of the things I used to joke about with, you know, it's always with the pod. It's like whenever you have a bad event or you just have, oh man, I gotta go talk about it on the podcast on Monday. Oh man.
Well, I'll tell you what, there were between how many rounds there were and the fact that there weren't technically enough people for a 5-round event, not a single person went undefeated.
That is a rarity. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even Lawrence Baker, his first round, he actually had a tie.
Yeah, he tied with 11th place Julian.
Julian, yeah, with his sisters from French War Game. He's not a name I'm familiar with in the YouTube community.
I did not know that. I didn't recognize it. What I did recognize, though, is there's a picture of Lawrence on my Facebook feed holding a very large check from the event. How large? Well, it's one of those big ones that they use for charity events, so it's probably like, you know, 3 feet by 5 feet. But the monetary amount is £300, so I did a quick Google thing. It's over $400. That's a pretty good haul for taking home a big tournament. So, yeah, I was kind of like, oh, okay.
I really hope, personally, that events don't go to cash prizes very often for things, because that would bring out some unsavory characters in certain circumstances if the event is large enough.
I think, well, that, and also you have to look at the additional, you know, bringing in additional referees and additional judges to watch some of those unsavory characters to make sure it is all above board. So, you know, it's depending what kind of event you want to run. So,
true.
Yeah. And this is all purely, you know, certain people were invited. It's not, this is by no regard them trying to push any kind of thing for how tournaments should be. It was just kind of a, hey, we're all, you know, people who are kind of all known in the streaming for 40K in one way or another. Let's do our own little tournament and have some fun with it.
I say, who knows? Maybe someone from Smite Club or the podcast will get invited someday if we get large enough. Who knows?
Never know. So those invites they're fun. They're the little invitationals. But yeah, but sometimes you get these crazy matchups. You're like, oh no, who am I playing? Okay. But now it'd be a lot of fun to get into one of those.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
So as I mentioned, there's one other event this weekend. We've been mentioned it once or twice on the show, moving up to it. Which one was that, guys?
I don't know. It ends with Onslaught and refers to a kind of cactus. The Ocotillo one. The Ocotillo Onslaught.
Yeah. So absolutely, we ran our event this weekend. And overall, we'll talk about the good points, the bad points, and our plans for the future. We definitely learned a lot. I had to say it was my first TOing experience since post-COVID. So that was, you know, what that would look like and kind of shake some of the rust off. Of course, I should have probably started small, instead jumped right to a GT. I was like, oh, okay, here we go. But Ray, you got our top five for the Ocotillo Onslaught?
Yes, I do. And first place we had Donovan Salo, and fourth, Robert Hurt with Orcs.
Hey!
Kind of did a thing.
Third was Timothy Barowick playing Cult Mechanicus. Second, Daniel Olivas playing Drakari. And in first, Tyler Hepler playing Forces of the Hive Mind.
Yeah, beautifully painted army, by the way. Just really, really nice fade effects and lots of gradients. Looked really nice. So overall, great. We had a lot of fun. Ray was there also. That was a big help. We had some little, just needed that extra help there. Just couldn't be everywhere at once. So that was a huge help, especially that first morning, just getting everything set up in time. And so Robert, as a player, what was your experience like?
Well, it was exciting for a 2-day event. because I last time I went to anything was the team tournament, and that was more stress than it was probably worth. It was great for my first FLG event, but team tournaments are hard to swallow sometimes. This one, because I was playing by myself, I got to see exactly how well I could do. The overall experience, it was definitely fun, and I'll get Dan one day. I'll beat him. I swear. It'll take me like 700 tries, but I'll do it. The terrain was definitely a shakeup on things instead of being static the entire tournament and literally being Planet Bowling Ball every game, because everyone knows how it's deployed or completely controlled. You had implemented some hybrid optimized terrain, which was a mixture of the GW book and FLG policies, right?
So so really what it was, it's the memory of the old tactical deployment book that everybody kind of just called Dead on Arrival. Surprise. I did make some modifications to it. And so the idea simply is that the larger pieces that are your line of sight blocking ruins that are generally board center anyway, those were already placed, and they do shift by mission. As a matter of fact, they're in different spots for each mission. But generally, they made like a, if you look at your dice, a number 5. So that's, they kind of form that formation. And that left each player with anywhere from 2 to 3 additional pieces that they had to be player placed. The other thing was different, that there were 3 pools of terrain. So if you walked up to a table and if you rolled defender, you got to choose which of the 2 pools were at that particular table. So you could either go with a ruined wall and a forest, or you could go maybe with a full ruin with a crater and a wall, or you could do another one was armored cargo containers, wall, and try to remember what the third thing was, probably a crater as well. So you can mix, because you're starting with a blank slate, you had that opportunity to add to it. So,
yeah, I would know. I got confused on my last round because every single other table I had the forest on it. And I got to the last table and went, where's the forest? why is there no forest here? But no, I had fun with this event, not only because I went 4-1, but it was just great to see everyone again, see new faces. And I know we also had the Age of Sigmar side of the community come and do a smaller tournament with us in the same room, but obviously we had a much larger attendance.
Yeah, it was good to partner up with them, and we'll be doing the same for our next event. So it was really nice. Get a good trial run, because it's the first time James and I have worked together in an event. So that was a lot of fun as well. So while we're on the train subject, just want to get this elephant out of the room. So we've been talking, here on the show, we talk a lot about tournaments that just are trying to shoehorn terrain from older editions into the 9th edition. So I made the terrible decision, we're going to make all new 9th edition terrain for this event. And sure, could it get done? Absolutely. In 5 weeks by yourself? No. So the aesthetics were just terrible. And it was embarrassing. And for somebody who pretty much thinks of themselves as a terrain builder first and a player second, it was just soul-crushing to put that out on the table. But, we'll make it better on the next one. And also got a lot of feedback on what terrain people wanted in terms of sizes and stuff like that and experiences from there. But it was also, as I was really beating myself up, mostly a Sunday. I didn't sleep at all on Sunday. I was just like, so frustrated with the situation, and as I was putting terrain away, a lot of it got pitched. I'm like, okay, I don't want to see it anymore. But then cooler heads kind of prevailed, and luckily bulk trash doesn't come until later this week. But good chunk of it did get thrown out. But I did keep some of the older stuff just in case we have it. Some of it can be retrofitted. But the bigger thing I took a step back on is, when my first major tournament I went to since moving to Arizona was the BAO. Now, most of you guys think of frontline gaming events as, these big affairs and all that. Well, back then, BAO was still at the fairgrounds. So you're basically next to a livestock show, and it's in the middle of nowhere. And that was one of their worst events ever that particular year. And it wasn't that it was... the biggest problem, it grew faster than they knew how to handle. And a lot of things that way tournaments were run back then were just not scalable. And it's laughable to think of it now, but the important thing, I have a positive point to all this. Rhys and Frankie sat back and said, okay, that can never happen again. How are we going to do that? And without that disastrous event for them, BCP would never be here. Because back in the old days, and what happened was some guy, and he used to do pairings on a spreadsheet. And every score was hand-entered. You sorted it in your spreadsheet. And then there'd be a printer that you'd hooked up to your laptop, printed off, and then one or two judges, depending on how big your event was, would post them, the next round's pairings, on the wall somewhere. So all of a sudden, the whole tournament is like cowering around this like pillar in the middle of the store, trying to read Hevika 12-point font. Is that me? Am I on table 4 or am I table 5? What am I looking at? So
yeah.
Now try doing that for 200 people.
Yeah, I remember actually running into that with some of my card game tournaments I used to do. Yeah, there was one tournament that had 2,500 people.
Oh my gosh. And wow.
Yeah, yeah. Yu-Gi-Oh events, man, they can get weird. Yeah, that's what happened a lot. They ended up having to do a QR code for it. So like,
so back to Akatio in the future. So yeah. That's the biggest question is, all right, it will get better. Sure, Eric. How? And that was a hard question. So we actually sat down, a bunch of us, after the tournament. And one of the biggest problems we realized was the way I make terrain is not scalable for mass production. Best way I can describe it is in terms of, let's say we were doing a team event. And Robert, we're going to give you an army that, you know, because all the other good choices have been taken. We need, you know, only one of each faction on our team. Robert, you're going to play an army that none of us own. So is it fair to make you, you know, build the army yourself? No. So, the four or five of us on the team would sit down. You open up some bunch of boxes and start putting models together. And it's pretty simple, right? It's part 6 attaches to part 7. That forms the torso. That part adds to part 9. That makes it to the legs. When you're building terrain, you design it and you kind of put it together. Isn't that simple? You know, it's especially to newer guys who are not used to building terrain. They're looking at the foam and all the cutting and all the weird tools I've got. They're like, what am I supposed to do with this? So a couple things we had already been in talks with a couple folks that own a laser. So we'll be able to cut our own MDF terrain. And so we'll be moving forward for that. And the nice thing with that is if people want to help us with building terrain, it says, here, assemble this kit. And they can do it on their, you know, on their own time. They don't have to be at a specific build date. They don't have to use, they can use tools that they have at their own home. So it makes it a little bit easier to kind of standardize and go from there. The good news also is all the designs that I did have for the foam terrain we had on this weekend and also all the previous tournaments I've done easily transfer over to the software that's available for the laser cutter. So we can have the same level of aesthetic, only a stronger material, and be able to pump it out of the hell of a lot faster. So so our next big event, Scorched Earth Open, will be in March. And so we figure we got the holidays coming up. So technically in the calendar, we've got 4 months to get ready. Realistically, we got 3 workable months. We should have plenty of time to get this fixed. And we'll give progress reports in between to assure you guys we've got this taken care of. So I think we'll be good.
Yeah, it's going to be a much better event since obviously everyone learns from their mistakes or rough patches. So like, this is your first Akatio Onslaught. It's not going to be perfect. So at that point, it's definitely going to be better the next time you do it in probably November of 2022. And then Scorched Earth is going to benefit. So,
right. So we're looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of you guys there. Last year, Scorched Earth, or was it last year? 2 years ago? Anyway, it was before COVID. It was right at the start of COVID, and we were 4 away from being a major. So, and that was the 3 weeks to go in ticket sales. So we will see how this year turns out. And tickets are, let's speak with the event organizer, because we actually share space with the Arizona Game Fair. So tickets should be going on sale relatively soon. So I'm looking forward to probably the next week or so. So take a look at that coming up relatively soon. But so other than that, let's talk. What other things did you guys notice at the Octio Onslaught in terms of maybe something that surprised you this week?
A surprising amount of orcs.
That is an understatement. It was, and what was also nice to see is a variety of lists from orcs.
Yeah, like I know it was me, our Smite Club member Justin, a local buddy of all of ours, that we call Slod, and I know those were three of the orc players. I think there was a total of four orc players there this weekend. I lost count because orcs can only count to three.
Yeah. And typically, Justin was our only orc player. So the fact that all these orc players came out was like, oh, wow. Okay, here we go. Justin's list was a little bit different from everyone's. It was actually a Blood Axe list featuring dual kill rigs. So first of all, kudos for him for finding two models of those.
Yeah. And correction, it was Evil Sons.
It wasn't Evil Sons. I apologize. Okay. I thought he was going for the fallback and charge ability. I'm mistaken.
Yeah, now when Justin had made light of he wants to see if he can make kill rigs work, I've played against a list that had two kill rigs in it. Those things are the biggest sponges I could ever play against. Those things can eat an entire army shooting, and then you still have one left.
Brutal, 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 brutal. And it's interesting with Slodgen's army, he had your archetypical speed buggy list. And but it was interesting to see how it some games were he was on top by a ton. He was able to pin the opponent deep in the deployment zone. So not only are they getting killed, but they're nowhere near an objective, so they're losing on primary. And other games he just seemed to be just picking up models like left and right. It was very interesting to watch.
Yeah, I would know. Going into him in round four, it came down to the difference of I had my planes, which let me create imaginary roadblocks against him, and then also him having a much larger parking lot footprint of everything can be minus one to hit, everything can get off, almost everything can get a five up invuln because of his Morkanaut, and it was definitely interesting to see how someone else would play the army. Rather than go, oh, here's all my planes and semi-important things.
Hey, listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Anonymous Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models. And when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com. And when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
Ray, what are some things you saw?
One thing that surprised me was someone coming with a Warhound Titan.
Ah, yes.
I heard about this and I was like, is that real? I'm like, oh my God. And then you see the model and it's like, oh my God, he did. Well, all right then. Okay.
Yeah, and, it makes me sad that he... Go ahead, Ray.
Oh, I was going to say, and one of the things I found out really quickly was that some of the terrain that you put together was actually able to hide it.
Wait, what?
Yeah, our line of sight blockers are 12 inches tall, so he can hide behind it.
Oh, okay. That was unexpected.
Well, the plan was, you know, one thing I always heard about, we kept hearing about is, you know, nobody plays Mortarian because there's nowhere to hide it. So I was like, all right, how tall does terrain have to be to hide a Primarch? And it turns out, well, about the same size as covering a Lord of Skulls. And some players had mixed feelings about that in earlier tournaments. So I was like, no, I'm going to go forward with this. I think this is a rare opportunity. And also, if you look at some of the GW terrain, they're anywhere from 10 to 15 inches tall. So I'm like, yeah, it's one or two of these. You don't need a whole table of it, but why not? And so, yeah, that was the War on Titan. I could actually hide behind it. I was like, oh, neat.
But, see, what I think would be funny is if someone in the Arizona area owns an actual Warlord Titan, like the big 6,000-point one, he should be the ringer and be like, yeah, no, it's just a contest to see if you can kill it. You'll win the game.
Yeah, so that was pretty neat. So, yeah, fun to see. I was not expecting that, and he was a really good sport about it. I just felt bad for him because it's we were talking a little bit about it. That Forge World Compendium is truly kept up with the newer codices as they've come out. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem, of course, he had was he can only hold one objective on primary. So he's one model. So basically, I got 5 points. That's all I'm ever going to score on primary.
Yep.
Robert, how about you? What other surprising thing you saw over the weekend?
It was actually the overall diversity, because looking through it, obviously we have mixed hive mind. We had two Admech. We had like two Dark Eldar. I actually counted. There was only three orcs, not four. Proves I can count. We had three Dark Angels players. And then from there, it was a nice jumble of Sisters, Thousand Sons, obviously Dawn with his Death Guard, Ultramarines, and some Grey Knights. Like, it was a nice mix of everything, which made me really happy.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, we haven't really touched on our winner, and Tyler coming in first place with Forces of the Hive Mind. Mm-hmm. Pretty much a Tyranid speed buggy list, if you really think about it.
Yeah, like when I walked by his table one time and I saw a Malin Scepter or something like that, some monster that I never see at all. I'm just, okay, Tyler, I've played against you once. You bring weird stuff. I'm fine with it.
Now, yeah, the Malin Scepter. I've
seen them.
Yeah. Which, they've really, I always have to laugh because I've been like, man, I should get one of those with my Tyranid army that I no longer have. And then I started laughing was because all of a sudden people, I don't remember who, but someone in the competitive scene started playing one, and then everybody who passed here and it started having one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, watch. Next thing Tyler does is he goes 4-1 at a GT or something like that and brings a Toxicrine, the one with the gigantic wide tentacles out of his face. Just good looking past that.
Yeah. But it was interesting to watch Tyler play, and he would just kind of, it was kind of like he wind up the toy and then spring across the table, and similar to a Speed Freak army, people couldn't get out, you know, and the next thing, mm-hmm. they're losing on primary. He's picking up models, I mean, he's picking up Gaunts and Gene Stealers, but you're not scoring, you know, on our final game, Donovan had done really well going into, and he just got thumped in the last round. I was like, oh, okay. And that was another thing. Yeah, I don't think he ever got out of his deployment zone. He just got swarmed. It was kind of like a Starship Troopers all over again. It was pretty wild.
You know, he had go ahead. I have a lot I can say about this. Go ahead.
Oh, I was about to comment about the Gene Stealer Cult stuff with the Acolyte Hybrids and the one Magus for the one game I played against him where he had more Gene Stealer Colt, I legitimately had to be aware of my flyers not having 9 inches to move. So I'm not surprised that those things are still in there, because that can actually block out a good amount of flyer abuse.
Ray, what were you going to say?
Oh, because I was kind of helping officiate, I was able to walk back and forth and kind of watch what was going on, and also watch because we were streaming the table at for the event, and because Tyler was able to not only keep Donovan in his deployment zone, he actually basically was able to get into a bit of a pincer where almost all the Dark Angels were kind of in the middle of his deployment zone. He was never able to hold more than really one objective. And the final match was a hold more objective. So because he could never get a second objective, he was never able to score primary points.
Yeah, like the overall thing that I see from looking at Tyler's entire list, the Sky Slasher swarms, which are flying Ripper swarms, super, super forgotten about. The fact that he can naturally reserve those to make Donovan be aware of cheap things coming in. The Tyranid Warriors are a nice thing. Obviously, the Hive Guard are amazing. But now it's the two units of 16 Gene Stealers that I'm surprised he didn't take a Kraken detachment to literally throw them across the table at Donovan. But hey, his toy worked.
Yeah. Well, what he was doing was he was using Swarm Lord to allow the Gene Stealers to move twice every turn.
Double move, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense.
Any other big surprises from the weekend, gentlemen?
Honestly, not really. Not really for me.
I just say maybe I was a bit surprised because I've seen this a few times in some of the tournament organizer discussion groups. Do we still need chess clocks? This edition plays fast enough and all that. And kind of, it's not a question of playing fast enough. It's about each player is getting equal number of minutes to play the game. I was shocked at we had a lot of issues of slow play. Now, granted, the terrain placement took up a little bit of time, but there were some things that it shouldn't take. I mean, granted, you're only placing two or three pieces of terrain. Why half hour in, you're still not even on turn one at this point? So that was something that was a bit surprising, that slow play is still an issue with a lot of players. So I was like, okay. So we are looking at extending rounds, adding some buffer zones for the player placed terrain. That was something that really, I thought it was like kind of like, you know, a dinosaur. I was like, wow, it's back. I thought that was dead. So I thought that was.
Yeah, I will admit to myself, in my round one, my opponent did put a chess clock on me. And as soon as I realized I'd been taking more than 10 minutes to get my army deployed, I went, yeah, no, this is an issue. Because by the bottom of my second turn, I only had 11 minutes left on my clock because of my shooting phases.
And it's so, I mean, it's, you know, working with it, practice with a chess clock, and it's not a speed thing, but it's also recognizing that. Like the last team tournament I was a part of, I had to, at that point, my primary army didn't have a codex, and it was one of those you want to obviously take the armies that have the newer codices. So I'd switched to another army, and one particular turn when everything came rushing in, we knew that'd be your longest turn. So I was like, okay, but this is the turn. If I don't do well in this turn, the game's over. So budget, you know, I would budget 40 minutes for this turn, knowing that, okay, I need to be very precise with my deployment and my movement and my charge movements and my pile-ins. So be good here, because there's plenty of time later. And the first two rounds, in the first rounds, really don't matter that much. They're, you know, you're just going to be picking up models. But if you don't know that going into the game, it becomes, yeah, you start looking at that clock and the numbers are going down. Oh, what do I do now? Huh.
Yeah, I know there was a few people that I've played against at other events where it has been, I've played twice as fast as them, and I moved twice as many models because they weren't being strict on their time. But it is definitely something to be aware of, and I would highly recommend, as someone that needs to practice on a chess clock, that if you practice on a chess clock, you will just naturally be faster because you'll be aware of how much time you're losing by hemming and hawing.
Right. You might appreciate this story. Robert, this might be a little before your time. So, I was talking to Neil back when on the 11th company days, and he said, when it's the other player's turn, that's when I'm planning my moves. So that's, and I have in that way, when it's my turn, all I have to do is execute the moves. So I used to joke, I need to play faster so you have less time to think. And so we were constantly pushing, you know, to play a little bit faster, a little bit faster. So I was at a GT in, I think it was in Reading, Pennsylvania. It's back when I still lived in Philadelphia. And this was the height of 5th edition, and I'm playing this Grey Knights player, and I'm playing my Chaos Space Marine army that is specifically tech to take out the Grey Knight Menace, which was, and I think I ran into two Grey Knight players that tournament, so I was in good shape. And I'm playing and we're going through and it's like turn three, maybe turn four. And he's like, you know, the hotel wasn't the most air conditioned place, but he is like sweating bullets, my opponent. He's just like literally just drenched. And I'm like, okay, what's going to do here? That's my psychic phase. You know, well, that's going to have psychic phase back then. It's my shooting phase. I'm going to make a charge. Okay, it's your turn. Okay. And he just looks at me and goes, charge! I'm like, what did I do? What did I do wrong here? And the guy kind of waddles over. What can I help you? Can I use like a timeout or something like that so I don't get clocked for a slow play? And he's like, yeah, why? He says, I just need a minute to step away and look at the board. I don't want to get in trouble for it. Yeah, I had goaded him to play so much faster that I'll hear my moves. Oh, I got to do that. He lost track. He lost completely. And then the fact that he was like, I need a timeout to figure out what the hell's going on. I was like, woohoo, mission accomplished.
The point isn't to win. The point is to make your opponent lose.
Yeah. So it worked. It worked really well. So, yes, play fast. You know, it helps you. But also recognizing a couple times I saw some of the better players. You know what? I'm going to put this on my clock, you know, and take the time to, you know, I've got time. I'm going to sit back and think this through before I may only get one chance to do this. Recognizing when's the critical moment and have that clock available. And then you know, okay, once I do it, I probably still have 20 or 50, 30 minutes left on the clock to do turns 4 and 5. You have fewer models, you have fewer moves to make. It's usually a lot easier to get through those turns.
Yeah, like I know in a lot of my games when I called you over to just ask a question, I asked a surprising amount of judge questions this weekend. I left everything on my clock because I was the one who called it, which is how you're supposed to do it, because it's my time. I'm asking the question. I'm not going to make my opponent lose out on time because of the fact that I had a question.
Right. Which is proper etiquette. So that works out pretty well. There was one other surprise. Oh, so big. We had a little post talk today, but also looking at all the exit surveys, it was very interesting in terms of the opinions on the player pace train hybrid system we used. And it was very clear those who had been to the FLG events earlier this year preferred, I want complete control. I want all the terrain in my hands and being able to place it where I want. And those where this was their first time playing with player place terrain were like, hybrid was good. I didn't need to make that many decisions. So it was interesting to see that through. So the conclusion I drew from that was a few more months of practice. By the time Scorched Earth rolls around in March, everybody's used to player place terrain, won't even need the hybrid system.
Yeah. As someone who did player fully controlled place terrain before, and now this, it's a weird muddy area because you want newer players to have fun and come and play and make sure they come back again, but at the same time you want to ensure that more competitive people don't show up and destroy them in the fact that they can optimize terrain better even if they only get half of it.
Yeah, we did have one player, he just stormed. Not happy with this. I can't believe this happened to me. And then I talked to his opponent. Can you tell me what happened in the game? And it was pretty clear. Was lost on deployment. The player just didn't know where to put what to protect his army and then left gaping holes and just got wiped out on turn one.
I would like to know who that was after the podcast.
So, but anyway, definitely, yeah, learned a lot in terms of, you know, what makes sense for the event. And, but I think all the basics of the event were pretty sound. So we've got a good building block for future events. So I was pretty happy with it. Venue was pretty cool. Nice to always work with. The crazy thing I forgot to mention to you guys is the event coordinator for the venue. She used to work at Gen Con, so she knew exactly what 40K was, and which was really good. It's Ray remembers this when we first ran Scorched Open, because even with the smaller table sizes, when you talk to a venue, you need two tables per table, which gets very confusing. So she was very good about referring to them as pods. So if you have two players per pod, which requires two tables from the venue to set up. And I remember once, how many tables do we have? And I was like, well, I just wrote the bill. We need 46 tables. That's a lot of terrain, and I forgot. No, that's 23 pods. You don't need that much terrain. So I need 96 ruins. What? Ray's looking at me like, what's the matter with this kid?
That moment, Eric couldn't math.
There's styrofoam everywhere.
There are a lot of things Eric couldn't.
It was bad. Last thing I'll add on to is this kind of a general comment. Where the venue is located in Old Town Glendale. A lot of fabulous restaurants. We had just lots to choose from. Wow, the reality of people not showing up for work, and that whole don't take it out on the people there. They're the ones that showed up. I felt terrible. We went out Sunday to the little Subway restaurant. I was with my son. He's got that was one of his favorites. All right, let's go in there. There was one employee in there for the entire lunch rush. And I brought it up, and the guy's like, well, we went there yesterday. It's the same girl. We're like, could you imagine working an entire weekend in a fast food restaurant by yourself?
Mm-hmm. And especially with what happened on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. Surprise. So it was a festive area and had a lowrider competition. So all these cars and with all the hydraulics and stuff, I was like, oh, it's like Radiation Springs out here. This is pretty cool. And the funny part, I was hoping we would get out in time because it was also Coyotes game with the brand new Seattle Kraken. We're just, 10 minutes down the road. I was like, that would have been fun to watch as well. It didn't quite pan out as planned, but it was pretty cool. It was a neat spot.
Yeah, the one barbecue restaurant right there on Glendale Avenue, I think it's JJ's. I give them full respect. We got there like at least 45 minutes before they closed. We ended up having to sit in that restaurant until almost 9:30 because there was maybe only two or three people working, and they had to feed about 8 or 9 people.
Yeah.
So that was, I give them full respect in dealing with our shenanigans.
It's funny, they locked the front door so no one else would walk in because it was past closing time. And then she goes, oh, the door's locked. Well, you guys can go through the back. I'm like, strangers being led to the back of a barbecue restaurant. What horror movie are we walking into at this point? And what am I eating at this point? Oh, gross.
But again, full respect to them. Their beef brisket was delicious.
Yes, it was. I was thoroughly impressed. It also was a fun place. Anyway, so yeah, it was a great event. Thank you for all the who came out. Also, just an outpouring of support afterward. It's a lot of thank yous over social media. So thank you again. And like I said, we will keep you guys up to date with progress posts as we lead into our next big event, Scorched Earth Open. But in the meantime, we still have some ITC season left in us. So let's talk about the current ITC top 10. Robert, you want to take it away?
I sure can there, boss. We got the old man, Brad Chester, currently sitting in the top spot. And then he usurped Sean. He usurped Sean's spot, knocking him down to second. And then it's John Lennon coming up in the bronze seat, followed by Jack Harpster, Colin McDade, Nick Nonavati, Manny Chima, Anthony Vanilla, James Kelling. I'm not going to read you twice. And then Malik Amin Rubio.
So nice to see the two guys from England making their splash into the IC top 10. Several key names that we talked about today, like Dan Sammons, we talked about coming in second earlier this weekend. He's jumped back up to 17th place and still in striking distance of getting into the top 10. So there is still plenty of season left to monitor, and we'll bring you all the news here on the Exterminatus podcast.
And a quick shout out, our Smite Club member, Ben Jurek, is in 52nd.
Go, Ben. Yeah, the original Orc War Boss. So the original freebooter, I should say.
Yeah, he's currently beating the original War Boss, Rich Kilton.
Oh, he did catch him for best in Orc? Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, Rich is all the way down in 70th.
Oh. And Ben's also the defending Scorched Earth champion. gives you an idea. And he took freebooters to that. So we'll see what he brings this year.
Yeah, I get to see if I take it from him this time.
We shall see. It should be pretty cool. Any other parting thoughts, gentlemen, before we wrap up the show this weekend?
None for me, because I'm the new guy.
Well, how about you, Ray? I saw there are a few large events still happening. So there's still definitely a chance for some people to make their way into the top 10 if they do well enough.
So we'll keep looking into that. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And I'm Robert.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.